I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump Sunday said that for many years, Mexico has not been cooperative to curb the surge of migrants traveling it to reach the United States. He said he believes an agreement will alleviate that problem. AP's Ben Thomas.
In a series of Sunday morning tweets, President Trump hails Mexico's commitment, but says if for some unknown reason such cooperation fails, we can always go back to our previous very profitable position on tariffs. On Fox News Sunday, Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Kevin McAleenan underscored the point.
There's a mechanism to make sure that they do what they promised to do, that there's an actual result, that we see a vast reduction in those numbers.
Mexico's U.S. Ambassador Martha Barcena Coqui tells CBS's Face the Nation the U.S., Mexico, and Central American nations are all working together on the migrant crisis.
We will continue to have technical talks almost weekly and then to evaluate constantly what is going on in these 90 days.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
Hundreds of thousands of Hong Kong residents marched Sunday against the legislation that would allow people to be extradited to mainland China to face charges. This is the largest demonstration the city has seen in years. The bill would allow the city to extradite suspected criminals to China and Taiwan. The chief executive, Carrie Lam, has said that such changes would close legal loopholes, but the changes have raised international concern about the future of Hong Kong's legal system. In the western Canadian city of Vancouver, hundreds of people protested outside the Chinese consulate in solidarity with the demonstrators in Hong Kong. Thousands of immigrants from Hong Kong settled in Vancouver in the 1980s and 90s, ahead of the 1997 handover of Hong Kong from Britain to China. Western-based activists who speak out against human rights violations in China feared that they may no longer be able to travel to Hong Kong without fear of arrest or extradition. This is VOA News. A lawyer for a prominent Russian journalist detained on drug charges has filed a complaint with the country's top investigative party, saying police used violence against him while in custody. AP correspondent Sarah Bassett.
Ivan Golunov was taken to a Moscow court after he complained of feeling poorly in police custody. During the hearing, he denied being involved with drugs. Following his release, one of Golunov's lawyers filed a complaint, saying police used violence against him while in custody, which they deny. Police are alleging they found 4 grams of a synthetic stimulant in Golunov's backpack, but many journalists suspect the arrest was retribution for his investigative reporting. I'm Sarah Bassett.
A day for a parade as thousands came out for the 62nd annual National Puerto Rican Day parade along New York's Fifth Avenue. AP correspondent Julie Walker.
Puerto Rican pride was on display everywhere you looked, with flags waving and people cheering as notables went by on floats like Ricky Martin, who was the Grand Marshal. Actor Danny Canelo was marching with his city flag.
I'm proud of my heritage, proud to be from the most beautiful city in Puerto Rico, Loíza.
And Puerto Rico's devastation by Hurricane Maria was not forgotten. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the city will erect a permanent memorial.
Puerto Ricans are American citizens, and what the federal government did was a disgrace.
Other politicians taking part included Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but one notable absence was Mayor de Blasio, who was out of town campaigning for president. At the Puerto Rican Day Parade, I'm Julie Walker.
Moldova has plunged deeper into political crisis on Sunday. The nation's constitutional court stripped the pro-Russian president of his power over his failure to form a new government. Lawmakers have been deadlocked for months. The court on Sunday also appointed the former prime minister as the interim president. Philippe has immediately dissolved the parliament and called for snap elections on September 6th. On Saturday in Washington, D.C., hundreds of people ran from a public park where the D.C. Pride celebration was being staged, fearing that a gunman had opened fire. A man was arrested on charges of weapons possession and disorderly conduct after he threatened another person with a BB gun, which is a type of air gun, and it turned out that 7 people were in fact injured from the crush of the crowds leaving the scene. A fast-moving wildfire took hold in a California amusement park Sunday, forcing hundreds of visitors to shelter in place while firefighters worked to contain that blaze. The fire at Six Flags Magic Mountain and Hurricane Harbor, north of Los Angeles, and ash and debris raining down on the heads of park visitors. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, June 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudanese protesters vow more civil disobedience to demand a civilian-led government.
They close the road that prevented the people to go to their work. And second, also, it created a lot of difficulties for the patient to go to the hospital to get medicine or medical treatment.
Dr. Farah Aga is the chairman of the Blue Nile Forum, an alliance of 14 political parties. Protesters in Liberia have publicized their petitions, but will the government accept them? Senegalese activists want their government to criminalize rape, and the war of words between Malawi's president and the main opposition leader continues.
First of all, we need to understand that there are reasons why the Malawian people are not accepting that he won. And we have taken these matters to court, and he ought to be able to be the first one to respect that.
Lazarus Chakwera is the former presidential candidate of the Malawi Congress Party, and Muhammad Ali's hometown names an airport in his name. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudanese capital Khartoum was tense on Sunday as the Sudanese Professionals Association called on citizens to stay at home as part of a civil disobedience against the Military Transitional Council. The protesters have been demanding a civilian-led government. Meanwhile, the Transitional Military Council indicated Sunday that it was willing to listen to the demands of the protesters and restart negotiations. Dr. Farah Aga is chairman of the Blue Nile Forum, an alliance of 14 political parties. He says the protesters closed roads and made it difficult for patients to access medical facilities. But he said life in Khartoum returned to normal by midday Sunday.
All the people were ready to go to their work in different fields of life. The civil disobedience, which had been declared from the group of freedom and change, today they made a lot of mistakes. They closed the roads that lead to the main roads that prevented the people to go to their work. And second, also, it created a lot of difficulties for the patients that also were in need to go to the hospitals so as to get medicine or medical treatment. Also, they're fighting the traders not to open their shops. And they say to them, if you open your shops, we are going to burn it. This is what made fears and suspicions to the traders not to open their shops. Anyhow, after all these difficulties, the people went to their work and they joined their institutions and the offices. And the life today is normal.
But Dr. Aga, the protesters say they want civilian rule in Sudan.
The military forces in Sudan are to normalize the life and to keep the security stable and to protect the citizens from the crimes that happen from the criminals, whom are always trying to surprise the people and to loot their properties and also to break their houses or shops.
So do you think that the military should continue to stay in power?
According to the Military Transitional Council declaration, the Military Council is not insisting themselves to continue in power. They say that they want to transfer the power to the civil parties and civil organizations. This is why they declared the elections to take place within 9 months.
When we talk about the Sudanese Professionals Association that are leading the protest, the Blue Nile Forum, where do you fit? Are you on their side or do you take a different position?
No, I have a different position.
What position do you have?
As I mentioned to you, we have 3 levels of power: the military council, the government, and the parliament. According to the security situation of the Sudan, which I mentioned to you, is fragile. We prefer the Military Transitional Council to remain, representing the sovereignty of the country until the end of this transitional period. But the government, our proposal is to be a civil government without any military participation. The parliament also, we have to be also civil without any participation from the military. This is our proposal, which is prepared according to the reality of the situation of Sudan.
Dr. Farah Aga is the chairman of the Blue Nile Forum, an alliance of 14 political parties and three civil society organizations. He was speaking with me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. The war of words between Malawian President Peter Mutharika and his main challenger in the May 21st election, Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party, continues. Chakwera has gone to court to challenge the election results. Meanwhile, Malawian police have fired tear gas on protesting Chakwera supporters. On Sunday, President Mutharika vowed that his government will not rehabilitate structures which had been demolished by protesting Chakwera supporters. Chakwera said, President Mutharika has a habit of running away from responsibility.
First of all, he needs to understand that there are reasons why the Malawian people are not accepting that he won. And we have taken these matters to court. And he ought to be able to be the first one to respect that. It's a constitutional right, and they cannot be shut up.
But, I mean, I assume he's saying that the election is over.
He has the right to say what he wants to say, but we have told him and others of his opinions that we do not accept the results of the election, and we have challenged the same. We have evidence, and we want to see what the courts will say. And within this next month, it should be completed, because the courts themselves have made it clear that within 24 days, that ought to be determined.
Do you have confidence in the Malawian judicial system and the court that they are going to render an impartial verdict?
I certainly have more confidence in the judiciary than I have in the Electoral Commission.
But the Election Commission is saying that it conducted a free and fair election.
They cannot be their own judges.
What do you make of what the president said on Sunday, that he's not going to repair or rehabilitate structures that were destroyed by your protesting supporters?
Is that a way of trying to run away from responsibility? Because his policemen have been shooting at our headquarters and shooting at people that have not caused any problem at all. But tear gassing us, is that how he wants to run away from that responsibility?
The president said that while he's trying to build Malawi, your supporters are destroying the country.
No. Everyone will tell you that our supporters have been marching peacefully. He can't be lying to everybody. We have news reporters across the country, and he cannot be the only one that is deluded and telling people lies.
You mentioned the police attacked your supporters, but the police were saying they were trying to maintain law and order because your supporters attacked some government buildings.
That is misinformation.
What exactly happened then?
You cannot have the police shooting at people inside a building and shooting canisters, well over 100. Are they intending to get us suffocated or something? I'm sure you've heard of the report that while I was meeting with the U.S. ambassador, she had come to say goodbye because her term of office was coming to an end, and the police were shooting tear gas while I was visiting with the U.S. ambassador. Our people did not provoke them. Twice they have shot at us. The world needs to know this. Not one-sided stories about people when they are doing peaceful marches.
So it's your belief that the elections were rigged in favor of President Mutharika?
Absolutely, they were rigged. We do not have a typical president. We will not accept that.
Are you not concerned that the protest might make Malawi more unstable and turn Malawi, say, into what's happening in countries like Zambia, where since that country's election, there's been this ongoing dispute?
If stability means stealing elections, then we don't want that stability.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Lazarus Chakwera is the former presidential candidate of the Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Today's Monday, June 10th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And let's send shout-out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations, Radio Life in Lofa County, Liberia, Radio Banga FM 96.5 in Bond County, Central Liberia, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, and Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour.
Opposition protesters in Liberia have called for the dismissal of President George Weah's entire economic management team due to the poor performance of the economy. As Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia, the Council of Patriots, who organized last Friday's massive Save the State protest, publicized their petitions on Sunday.
This was Friday when thousands of Liberians took to the streets chanting and singing different slogans and different songs about Liberia's ailing economy and alleged acts of corruption and poor governance. They had wanted to deliver their petition to the government through Vice President Jua Hawatida, but she was, however, indisposed. When Justice Minister Musa Dean and Foreign Minister Bernard Finney stepped forward to receive the petition, the protesters demanded first the release of their colleagues who had been arrested by the police the day before the protest, but the government refused and the petition was never delivered. Yesterday, Sunday, the protesters read a strong worded petition read by popular radio talk show host Henry Costa. The Council of Patriots, among many things, blamed the government for the current state of the economy and called for the disbanding of President George Weah's entire economic management team and the prosecution of his members.
Special reference is made to Finance Minister Samuel Twe and CBL Governor Nathaniel Pitrick, for which they must be dismissed and prosecuted for criminal culpability under their direct charge. The bogus mop-up exercise was conducted and missing billions mismanaged.
The protesters also said they were alarmed by what they say is the continued erection of high-rise buildings by President Weah. Coupled with others, they say the president is accumulating in a short period of his administration and demand an audit.
Conduct a comprehensive audit of all and any of the dozens of personal infrastructure and or building projects undertaken by President Weah at several locations in Mansourada County since he assumed office, including the purchase of a private jet and a yacht.
The protesters also called for the full implementation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recommendations, which would lead to the establishment of war and economic crime court in Liberia to prosecute people who allegedly committed crimes during the country's 14-year civil war and those who have corrupted and corrupting the country.
Establish a task force with clear mandate to implement the recommendations of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, TRC, particularly the recommendation for establishment of a war and an economic crime court in Liberia without delay. The government of Liberia should make a request to the United Nations for such a court before July 26, 2019.
The protesters also made recommendations in various thematic areas, just as agriculture, education, health, human rights, fight against corruption and rule of law, among others, which they say could contribute to national growth and development. Friday protest is considered the largest peaceful gathering of Liberians since the end of the civil crisis in 2003 and appear to have claimed the attention of the government to the point it shut down all social media in the country. Eugene Nangwe is Liberia's information minister.
The government, based on national security concerns and reasons, disrupted some social media sites in the interest of protecting the security of the state. We utilized the law to ensure the safety of the country, including the safety of those who were protesting and those who were not protesting.
The Council of Patriots, organizers of the protest, has given the government 1 month to respond to its petition. But the government, we have to first receive the petition. Moses Gaziel, VOA News, Monrovia.
After two violent rapes and murders in Senegal, activists are calling on the government to criminalize rape, which is currently classified in a lower category of crime. Kumba Touré, a coordinator for Africa Rising, spoke to Ricky Stryak about what the civil society groups are demanding of their leaders.
The main ask was for rape to be criminalized. I think the reality is that the movement came up to just say something has to be done. Why would women be raped and killed, you know, in this rate? And what needs to be done out of it? And that's what it, you know, came from. Now, of course, people who are more, you know, in the legal space will say, you know, one of the things that is needed is through the law, that at least that when people who are raped, you know, go, you know, to seek justice, that they have the instruments that they need, even, you know, be able to judge the people who did it.
The current law in Senegal states then that it is a délit, what you say in French. So right now, if someone is accused of rape and found guilty, what is the punishment and kind of what would criminalizing it or making it a felony, I believe is how we would say it in English, how would that affect the sentence and the sense of justice for rape victims?
Yeah, it definitely affects the sentencing and how, you know, the judges handle the situation. When it's a délit, I don't know the exact term in English. If it's like a misdemeanor, something that's not as, that you don't see the gravity, then it's easier for someone who's accused of rape to just, to get out of it really easily.
After the sit-in that happened, what is the next step? Has there been any government reaction?
Yes. What I would say that women have been pushing for this and asking, it's that, you know, the voices are not always heard. But I think the fact that there was a, like, popular uprising, gave the opportunity for people and women who were already working on this and pushing every day about it, lobbying, talking to people, showing the cases. The movement and these cases gave them more leverage and access even to the politicians. What happened since then, and this is still to be verified, was that the president have called for a law to be voted that will criminalize rape. We need to know, when will this come up? When will it go to the National Assembly? Of course, we need to organize and work and make sure that when it gets there, that it's voted.
That was Kumba Touré, a coordinator for Africa Rising. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Muhammad Ali amazed the world as a champion boxer and political activist. After passing away in 2016, Ali's hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, is memorializing him by officially naming its airport after him on June 6. The move also highlights one of Ali's most famous quirks. Viewers Alem Bohana reports from Louisville, Kentucky.
No fight. Never worry about fights.
What do you worry about?
Nothing, really. Only bad airplane flights. No fights.
People say Muhammad Ali feared no boxer, but he did fear something else.
And I think about the plane splitting and the long fall, and I say, why did I have to rush? I could have took a bus. Oh, Lord, if you just let me off of here, I'll take a train the next time.
His fear of plane travel was well known.
He was afraid to fly, so, you know, it's just one of those things. Something he feared. It wasn't another man in the ring, I can tell you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Louisville, Kentucky.
Ironically, Ali's name is now a part of the aviation world.
So we thought it would be a fitting statement for us as a city to put, you know, an exclamation point with his name that, okay, Muhammad, now we're naming the airport after you. It's time for you to get over your fear of flying.
In January, the Louisville Regional Airport Authority Board voted to rename its international airport after the hometown legend.
A committee was formed. They met multiple times over the course of about a year and a half. And as they were going through these meetings, it really became apparent that the recognition of Muhammad Ali, the fact that he's from Louisville, that it made a lot of sense that this should be the Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport.
Ali was also known as an outspoken activist who converted to Islam and was convicted of draft evasion for refusing to be inducted into the army during the Vietnam War. The president of the Muhammad Ali Center says he hopes naming the airport after Ali will highlight his legacy.
So we want to make sure that the general public has a great understanding of why the airport was renamed and the importance that it represents to the Muhammad Ali Center, the family, the nation, and the world.
Ali was born and raised in Louisville and was buried here in 2016. This Kentucky city is still celebrating the man who became a global icon. Alam Burhanan, VOA News, Louisville, Kentucky.
For Daybreak Africa Sports, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in France, where the 2019 Women's World Cup kicked off last Friday with 24 teams in the race to be crowned queens of the game over the month-long tournament in France. There are 24 teams classed into six groups. Africa's representatives are Nigeria's Super Falcons, Banyana Banyana of South Africa, and the Indomitable Lionesses of Cameroon. Two of Africa's representatives took to the field on Saturday, recording losses by 3 goals each. South Africa were beaten 3-1 by Spain, while Norway crushed Nigeria by 3 unanswered goals. Desri Ellis is the Banyana Banyana head coach.
We deserve more out of the game. I also felt that, we were very organized. Even though they had a lot of possession, they struggled to break us down. And on the counter, we always looked very, very dangerous. But if you do not take your chances, that is the result. But very proud of the team. They put up a great performance.
For Super Falcons of Nigeria head coach Thomas Denaby, getting a positive result against South Korea in their next match is a must.
Yeah, of course, I'm very disappointed. I think we started the first half very well. We followed the match plan extremely good, and I think we have good control of the game.
President of the Confederation of African Football, CAF, Ahmed Ahmed, was released by French anti-corruption officials without charge on Thursday. Ahmed was in France to attend the 69th FIFA Congress, which ended on Wednesday. His passport has been handed back to him, meaning he's free to travel. The 58-year-old football administrator was summoned by French police on Thursday to question him for alleged misappropriation of funds and corruption involving his dealings with French company Tactical Steel, which some people speculate Ahmed Ahmed has personal ties to. And with barely 2 weeks before the 2019 African Cup of Nations begin in Egypt, several teams have got their preparations underway. Kenya beat Madagascar 1-0 on Friday night at the Stade Robert Bobin Stadium in Paris, France. Harambee Stars will now continue with their camp in France until the 19th of June and will then head for Cairo in preparations for their African opener on the 23rd of June against Algeria in Group C. Harambee Stars captain is Victor Wanyama.
It's always important, you know, to have games friendly like this and to get on a good run. And you know, when you win games like this, it gives you confidence going to the next one with the big confidence, and also more is a morale to us players. And it's just important to start this way.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sudanese capital Khartoum was tense on Sunday as the Sudanese Professionals Association called on citizens to stay at home as part of a civil disobedience against the Military Transitional Council. The protesters have been demanding a civilian-led government. Meanwhile, the Transitional Military Council indicated Sunday that it was willing to listen to the demands of the protesters and restart negotiations. Dr. Farah Aga, chairman of the Blue Nile Forum, an alliance of 14 political parties, says the protesters closed roads and made it difficult for patients to access medical facilities. And the war of words between Malawian President Peter Mutharika and his main challenger in the May 21st election, Lazarus Chakwera of the Malawi Congress Party, continue on Sunday. Chakwera has gone to court to challenge the election results. That is it for this Monday, June 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.